We're discussing what to teach about racism permeating our institutions across America, creating a legacy of disadvantage for people of color, and this academic concept of critical race theory that's become a divisive topic in politics. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A media watchdog group that tracks right-leaning media outlets, Media Matters, accounted the mentions of critical race theory on Fox News. In June, there were 901 mentions on the network. That's the highest number of any month since they started tracking it in June of last year. And according to Brookings, 8 states have passed legislation banning critical race theory-related content from being taught in schools. What do you want to know about critical race theory? What concerns do you have? 800-642-1234. Christopher Emden is an associate professor of education at Columbia University's Teachers College. Chris, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
So great to be back with you.
Well, first, some working definitions that can help root us, because people may think they know what critical race theory means. How would you define it?
Critical race theory is simply an area of study that began in law and legal studies that really had the intention of allowing scholars in the law to make sense of the ways that race has affected the ways that they construct law and how it gets interpreted. In layman's terms, you know, if we understand that we live in a country where folks may not necessarily have a racial intent, but their structures within the law or their particular laws are interpreted in different ways across locales, it may mean then that those laws get interpreted in ways that may do harm to particular populations, particularly Black and brown folks. So the broader definition of critical race theory in many ways has almost nothing to do with education and teaching and learning. There's some tenets within it that have informed some frameworks when it comes to education. But writ large is a way to have us look at ways that our laws are not necessarily colorblind and how they may impact certain populations.
Well, with schools, as you mentioned, you know, Wisconsin is one of a number of states with proposals to rein in how schools teach about our country's history of racism and slavery oppression. And this is part of a national trend that you're seeing attacking this so-called critical race theory. What do you think that is at the root here of conservatives being really affected by this concept?
You know, the really important thing for us to articulate about the sort of current climate around critical race theory is that it has nothing at all to do with the concept of critical race theory. And folks who hear that are like, well, you know, what do you mean? You know, we're banning critical race theory because, you know, we don't want it taught in schools. There are a couple of basic facts I have to sort of like put out there. The first one is that no one, literally no teachers are in classrooms in K through 12 across the nation teaching young folks about this aspect of legal studies. No one is teaching critical race theory to babies in classrooms. I would argue that if they were, they certainly would be very advanced young people who had the sort of intellectual capability to be able to make sense of legal scholarship, and I'd be impressed. But it's just not being taught in school. That's the first part. The second thing to sort of take note of is that critical race theory is being used as almost like a catch-all, like a sort of like an invisible sort of blanket to wrap around issues of culture or equity or diversity or culturally relevant teaching or culturally sustaining teaching. It's being used as a catch-all to sort of ban or try to eliminate a number of perspectives, not approaches to teaching, perspectives on teaching and learning that makes folks uncomfortable. And I would argue that this sort of newfound fervor around critical race theory, mind you, a theory that has been in existence for 40 plus years, the reason why it's sort of like reaching this sort of feverish pitch is because it's being used as a political ploy to distract folks from doing work in classrooms that may meet the needs of populations who historically have been underserved. This is not about harming people. This is not about, you know, young people, you know, having an education that that makes them feel not welcome or whole. It's really about attempting to create a weapon of mass distraction from approaches to teaching and learning that may meet the needs of diverse populations. And we have to be really explicit about naming that. We are fighting a war against a construct that doesn't really exist. And what that means to me is that we should not be wasting our time and energy combating this sort of arbitrary thing that is a ploy of folks of a certain political sort of leaning, but rather lean in on ways to make sure that young folks feel whole. And when I say young folks feel whole, I'm talking about Black young people and brown young people. I'm talking about young people who have who are able and who may be categorized as disabled, young folks from different sexual orientations. This is not about harming. It's about distracting. And it's important for us to name that.
If you're just joining us, we're exploring critical race theory with Columbia University education scholar Chris Emden, whose latest book is called Ratchedemic, encouraging teachers to allow students to display their academic greatness without sacrificing their identities. What do you want to know about critical race theory? How do you want schools to teach about our country's legacy of slavery, of racism, oppression? Should we explore how our history continues to affect our country or celebrate overcoming our worst moments? 800-642-1234. So, Chris, you know, if critical race theory is not being taught in K-12 schools, how is it taught or conveyed in a teacher's college, for instance, or in colleges to students training to be teachers?
You know, teachers' colleges view educators not just as cogs in a machine to go and sort of like, you know, articulate lesson plans or regurgitate ideas. We treat teachers like they're full and whole human beings and experts and intellects. And as the critical race theory interrogations within the law happens to make them sort of make sense of how laws may slant towards certain populations, we want teachers to be informed on how that may happen in education. Critical race theory in education is not the fundamental underpinning of teacher preparation. It is, though, a piece of a number of theoretical frameworks that we allow teachers to explore to make sense of how to teach or to make sense of what kind of philosophies may help their teaching. So, you know, critical race theory serves just like sociocultural theory. It treats the teachers like intellects who have the ability to make sense of complex theoretical frameworks and utilize them to make sense of how they need to make sense of what they're doing in classrooms. It is not in the lesson plans that teachers are given. It is not in the curriculum that they're being handed. It's not in the particular things that they go out and teach. They still teach social studies and English and math and all of the subject areas. But if you believe a teacher is an intellect, you believe a teacher is an intellectual, you believe the teacher should be able to sort of make sense of the world and be aware of sort of academic work, then you allow them to be able to make sense of a number of theoretical frameworks. In fact, I would argue that I would like my educators who are going to be teaching my babies to be not only have the intellectual heft to be able to deal with theoretical frameworks, but also to be able to have the critical thinking to be able to deduce from those frameworks what best practice is in classrooms. And so, you know, I work in teacher education. I have introduced critical race theory alongside with other theoretical frameworks because I trust the teachers to be able to make sense of the world. And I view them as intellects who can comprehend and make sense of an advanced theoretical framework. Now, what's happening in the law, you know, what's happening in, you know, in Idaho and or in Iowa or even Wisconsin with these proposals to ban CRT is the opposite of that. They are treating teachers and treating schools and treating institutions of higher education as though those who work within them don't have the intellectual veracity or complexity to be able to make sense of a number of theoretical frameworks. This is an attempt to sort of erase this idea of critical thinking, this idea of troubling ideas, this idea of interrogating theories from the whole entire enterprise of teacher preparation. That is so problematic, because if you erase anything that makes a teacher think from the process of teaching and learning, how do they teach young folks to be able to think? It's not about the frameworks, it's about teaching or preparing teachers to be able to think so they can prepare young folks to be able to do the same.
Well, it's interesting parallel when you treat teachers as individuals with intellects and you're also, you know, encouraging students to really hone in on their identities and not have to leave those identities to achieve their, you know, highest potential. Do you see parallels there?
Absolutely, there are parallels. I mean, if you cannot trust a teacher to be able to you know, make sense of the world around them, and then inform young people with information about the world around them so that those young people can make decisions about the world as they learn academic content, then you may as well not have schools. It's so funny, the critics of CRT are doing exactly what they profess that CRT does, even though CRT doesn't exist. It's a fascinating construct, right? You know, the claim is that CRT will indoctrinate, that CRT will not make folks be able to think for themselves. You know, there are all these critiques of what culturally relevant, of what critical race theory would do in education, while the entire enterprise around banning critical race theory serves to eliminate opportunities from young folks to be able, or teachers, to be able to think critically, to be able to make sense of phenomena. It almost is like, you know, I will accuse you of something because my intent is to ensure that what I'm accusing you of continues to persist. I mean, if you look at, you know, private schools who are right-wing leaning, and, you know, it's a phrase I have troubles with, you know, right-wing leaning, but, you know, what you'll find in those schools is that they have curriculum, they have textbooks, they have lesson plans that are handed to teachers that are really about a revisionist history that are explicitly called slavery, you know, the Black migration, and, you know, and that, you know, that will say we want our young people to be critical, to have critical thinking, but yet only utilize a perspective that bans looking at the world in sort of in more diverse ways. And what you're finding is that it almost seems as though the critics of critical race theory are looking to have that right-wing leaning curricular approach be normalized rather than open up the space for multiple perspectives so young people could be more informed. And that's what's problematic.
Let's pause there with Christopher M. Din, who's an associate professor of education at Columbia University's Teachers College, where he also serves as director of the science education program. Are you a parent of a K-12 student? How have teachers addressed racism in our history and culture? How do you talk to your child about this? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how to teach about the legacy of racism and oppression in America and why critical race theory has become this flashpoint. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The concept that emerged late 70s, early 80s, says that racism is structural. It's steeped in our institutions, that it's not merely the product of our individual bias, our individual prejudice. What do you think of efforts by Republicans to ban critical race theory? Why do you think they're attacking it? 800-642-1234. Christopher M. Din is an associate professor of education at Columbia University with us for the hour. Let's bring in Joe now in Platteville. Hi, Joe.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Good morning. You're a former history teacher.
Yeah. I taught it for 33 years, and the thing that I see the conservatives who are talking about this, they want the Schoolhouse Rock version of history to be what kids learn, and they don't want the truth to be the thing that is out there, which is kind of horrible, more than kind of. Slavery was terrible, and they want that glassed over. And it's something that is a real complex thing to teach, but the best thing you can do is just take the information from that period of time and show it to the kids and have them figure it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, Frederick Douglass and people like that explained what it was like to be a slave. And it's horrible. I mean, it's a terrible part of our history, and a lot of people just want to glass it over,
Joe,
and that's what they want to do.
Joe, thank you for the call. Chris, how do we acknowledge and teach about these really disturbing parts of our country's history?
I think Joe's point is so powerful, and I just want us to pause for a minute and think about what he just said, right? You know, he's saying that he, as a teacher, trusted the students enough to provide them with real life information, real life accounts, real life musings or perspectives from that time that may vary. And then also trust the students enough to make sense of that phenomenon and then construct a worldview from that. That, listeners, is teaching. It's to trust the teacher and trust the student to present the information, to foster the intellect of the young person and their perspectives, to allow them to be able to draw conclusions from the information they've been presented, and to also trouble their perspectives once they've drawn them with other perspective. Learning is the perpetual pursuit of deeper thinking. It's the provision of information. It's the provision of deep questions. It's the trusting of the learner to make sense of that phenomena. It's to allow them not to feel comfortable in any one particular perspective, but to always offer the other, and to open them up to a way of thinking that makes them want to pursue more knowledge on their own once they've left the classroom. How can anyone who professes to care about young people, how can anyone who professes to care about creating a next generation of Americans who are able to be critical thinkers and offer their own perspectives and be able to be successful in higher education and beyond, how can anyone who cares about the next generation say that they will ban an approach to teaching and learning, or ban a perspective, or look to ban a perspective through a made-up outrage and say they care about the future of this nation? I would argue it's impossible. To teach is to be able to do the work to allow the next generation to be able to be informed by the past, aware of the present, and clear with a vision for the future. And what these folks want to do is completely erase the entire, not only past, but also present, in a pursuit of a future that would be a flawed, hollow iteration of the present. And, you know, what folks don't understand is that the use of the language of indoctrination while robbing folks of information is in itself the ultimate form of indoctrination, because then you have a generation who is so ill-informed, who is so misinformed, that they are bound to replicate the flaws of our past. This is what we're arguing with here. You know, this is what we're dealing with here. This is the conversation that we're having here. We're having a conversation around folks who are looking to erase our present and past, so that they will allow the next generation to replicate our worst moments, rather than have them be informed about our past, so that we can move forward with a way that is deeply aware of where we've been, so we could carve out a way going forward that does not only replicate the past, but take the worst parts of our past and implant that into our future.
I want to reintroduce you here, Chris Emden, Associate Professor of Education at Columbia University's Teachers College, where he also serves as the Director of the Science Education Program. You can join in. How should schools teach about our country's legacy of slavery, racism, and oppression? What do you know about critical race theory? What do you want to know about it? 800-642-1234. Chris is joining us from Greendale. Hi, Chris. What is your perspective?
Hey, yeah, I guess my perspective is, so I, as a father of a biracial child, I guess my concern, and I think it's something that is a concern for those in sort of the middle, is that they're being kind of given a choice, and maybe it's a false dichotomy, but between sort of, on the one side, this very right-wing kind of revisionist view of history of, well, look at all the amazing things of the West and the United States have done, and let's push all the things under the rug that are awful or dissatisfactory, right? And then on the other hand, I feel like, I think it's a false dichotomy, because I think there's more nuance on the left, but at the same time, I don't think that's what people see. I think what they see then is the alternative, which is this idea of the West being this sort of monolithic actor of oppression and promoting these concepts of like whiteness and everything else. And I feel like it's a false dichotomy. I feel like that a more nuanced view is necessary. And I think that what's commonly referred to as critical race theory on the right really isn't indicative of what critical race theory fundamentally is. But simultaneously, I think there's legitimate concerns about the way in which the dialogue has been going in recent years towards its view of the United States and its view of the West more broadly.
Chris, thank you. Chris Emden, your thoughts?
I love that point. I think both of our callers so far, they come from very different perspectives, but I honor both of those perspectives. And I would agree that we're dealing with false dichotomies. We're dealing with false binaries. And we're dealing with folks who are, you know, extreme on either side of this this sort of like social construct of a binary. The problem that I have and the challenge that we all should have is that anyone who is unwilling to understand the nuance, right? Like anyone who's unwilling to deal with the areas of gray in the existing public discourse is perceived as either A, ill-informed, or B, unwilling to choose a side. But I think legitimately, this is not an issue of choosing a side. It's an issue of teaching and learning. It's an issue of having young folks conform. And I think that, you know, what there's a really, really like underhanded, aim here. Because, you know, critical race theory, CRT, is oftentimes used concurrently with critical culturally relevant teaching, which also has, you know, that, you know, also CRT. And I think what's happening on the right oftentimes.
And we have to, let's just pause right there as we get a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the concept of critical race theory on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. State lawmakers debated and listened to testimony last week on bills that would ban schools from teaching ideas connected to CRT. Here's Republican State Senator Andre Jacques, an author of the bills.
It has come to my attention that a growing number of school districts are teaching material that attempts to redress the injustice of racism and sexism by employing racism and sexism, as well as promoting psychological distress in students based on these immutable characteristics. Whiteness is intrinsically a problem, and that racism is ubiquitous, and that a feeling of white supremacy is a given.
How do you feel about these debates at the intersection of politics, education, and race in America? 800-642-1234. Christopher Emden is an associate professor of education at Columbia University with us for the hour. Chris, I wanted to have you finish your thought there. You were talking before the news break about culturally relevant teaching getting intertwined, mixed up in critical race theory. What's going on?
Yeah, thanks so much for bringing that back up. I was almost so struck by that quote for the lawmaker.
Oh, we'll get there too.
Yeah, man, it's so deep, so much to talk about. But yeah, you know, this ban on critical race theory or assault on critical race theory, CRT, and the implications of that ban or the implications of that assault on CRT, critical race theory, being attached to culturally relevant teaching, CRT, is really important for us to note. Any educator who's worth their weight in salt or worth their credential understands the importance of a culturally relevant teaching, the importance of a teaching and learning that aligns to the culture, the perspectives of their young people, to allow their young folks all feel whole and welcome, particularly those who may not feel whole and welcome all the time. You know, the teachers who teach understand why CRT is important. And the banning of CRT, critical race theory, and the implications of it possibly meaning for certain teachers that I should not employ culturally relevant teaching is so important. Because in the absence of culturally relevant teaching, it will have awful effects on young folks who historically have not done well in schools. Any young person who feels not whole, not welcome, not seen, that a teacher will feel like, I can't really focus on the needs of this child because if I do, I may be perceived as violating this CRT ban or law. And even the notion of invoking that fear in teachers who otherwise would be just doing good work is important for us to recognize. And, you know, I see no significance or no value in battling these folks who are banning CRT tooth and nail because, frankly, I've looked at some of these bills that they're proposing. It's so arbitrary. It's so broad. It really has no teeth. And so any teacher who teaches can just say, you know, I'm not violating those things. I think it's more symbolic than anything else. But my fear is that that ban or those proposals will cause certain teachers to be fearful of doing the good work of just teaching.
And that is
something that I'm concerned about. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to Ian now in Madison. Hi, Ian. Go ahead.
Hi there. I really appreciate this conversation, and I think it's definitely really important to distinguish the differences between CRT and some things like culturally relevant teaching. I am curious, Professor Emden, if you have any thoughts, though, on how far this framework of sort of preventing people from teaching things could or should go. A lot of times, right, we've seen in Europe that there have been a lot of structures in place to make sure that the Holocaust is taught in certain ways, and they limit people who may deny, you know, these sort of really horrible things that have happened. And I just want, I'm just curious how far your sort of framework and how we allow teachers to teach certain things in different theoretical frameworks in their classroom, given that context.
What a brilliant question. I do agree that it's a slippery slope. I do agree that, you know, if we agree to ban an approach, it may lead then to a further extension of what is being banned or otherwise. But I also believe that teachers and classrooms, communities, parents, and even young people, you know, must be armed with the information about what's being banned so that they can argue back against it. I think the oftentimes it's sort of like erosion of the parameters, right? An extension of what gets banned is the limitations of the power of that movement is the extent to which the community can battle back against it. I don't think it's a responsibility, like, I don't think it should be the sole responsibility of educators to spend all their efforts combating politicians about what they want to ban in classrooms when 95% of those politicians have not been in the classroom. I think that it's more of our work to be able to ensure that we empower communities to understand why pedagogically and educationally it makes more sense for us to be able to teach in more robust and sort of profound ways. So I think that you don't want folks to keep banning everything, but you want to inform communities to ensure that what's being banned cannot get to the point where it's really impacting actual teaching and learning. And so I err on the side of informing communities. So my book, Ratchademic, Reimagining Academic Success, is one approach that says, listen, you can argue about CRT all day long, because I know it has no teeth in this political posturing and you want to distract us. Rather, as an educator, as a parent, as a community member, I want to advocate for and push for an approach to teaching and learning that allows young people, that allows teachers to be able to lean into their forms of expression, their forms of culture that may be rooted in who they are racially and sexually or otherwise, to be able to be introduced into the classroom concurrently with academic content. And so I would push on the side of invoking a ratchademic energy in classrooms than combating every CRT effort. Because at some point when parents and communities are informed, when parents and communities and young people are engaged, when they know what they want to learn and how they want to learn it, and they can be welcomed in the classroom, they will not allow that movement to ban their humanity. And perhaps it's an altruistic approach. Perhaps it's me just always leaning and looking at a belief in communities to be able to combat silly political posturing. But that's my position.
We're talking with Chris Emden, who's an associate professor of education at Columbia University's Teachers College, where he serves as director of the science education program. What do you know about critical race theory? What comes up in this conversation? What do you want to know? Join in 800-642-1234. Chris, touching on Senator André Jacques, State Senator André Jacques, and the notion whiteness is intrinsically a problem and that racism is ubiquitous and a feeling of white supremacy is a given. What do you make of those words in the legislature of Wisconsin?
I think Senator Jacques is talking from his own perspective. It's not reflective of reality. One cannot be an elected official and then offer up a law or a set of laws or an effort to ban an approach or perspective based on your singular interpretation of that approach that is ill-informed and not reflected by any body of literature, not any actual evidence, but rather just some musing of yourself and maybe a couple of folks that you surround yourself with. I don't believe that the argument to engage in work in classrooms for any teacher who's working with Black students and white students, no teacher would dare utter to a young person in K-12 education that your whiteness and your identity is inherently problematic and violent. No one does that. No one's doing that. And I think that this false notion that there is this secret sect of educators in schools who are telling white students how bad they are, it's the stuff of fiction. And to be honest, conversely, there are curricula in schools, in public schools across the United States, who, if it erased the history of Black and brown bodies, would be telling them the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. That the same thing that we are accusing some imagined population of doing around whiteness is happening today around Blackness and brownness. And so, you know, these are folks who are constructing laws based on projections of things being targeted against them, when in reality, we have experiences in K-12 education that are particularly targeted in ways that erase the experiences and the backgrounds of Black and brown young folks and those from other marginalized backgrounds. I mean, it's just utter silliness. And, you know, I'm always concerned when folks articulate flawed perspectives that are based on their individual musings around a phenomena, and then utilize the law to push that. In many ways, that is what critical race theory is looking to. Critical race theory, for those who study the law, is looking to study the ways that Senator Jacques articulates her perspectives about what teachers are doing in classrooms that does not exist, thereby stoking the flames of those who exist in a white right-wing framework that they should be fearful of schools, of Black folks and communities who are advocating for their rights. Like, his statement is why critical race theory exists, because he's constructing a false notion and looking to utilize the law to make that become a writ large carte blanche approach to teaching and learning in schools.
But is the notion of whiteness something that teachers should be talking about with students?
Teachers should be talking to students about history. Teachers should be talking to students about whose voices are heard and whose voices are not. Teachers should be talking to students about perspectives in history that come for Black folks and brown folks and LGBTQIA folks. Teachers should be introducing young people to phenomena as they exist in real time and then offering students the perspectives to make sense of that. I don't think that we should be having classrooms in schools that would name something like whiteness as problematic. I agree that that shouldn't happen. The thing is that it's not happening, nor are we anywhere near that. And I think this idea of creating this false alarm for the sake of truly political posturing in the post-Trump era that invoked a phenomenon across the nation that one is either pro-white or pro-Black, and that we're dealing only in extremes, when the reality is that folks in this nation understand more nuance. And this is essentially an attempt to be able to gather some sort of fervor and attention by folks within a particular sect who become more vocal in a post-Trump era. That's what this is. This has nothing to do with education, has nothing to do with teaching and learning, has nothing to do with our future, has nothing to do with what's happening in schools. It's literally a political stunt.
Let's bring in Tom in Milwaukee. Tom, what is your perspective?
Hi, I just tuned in, so I'm not sure what I have to offer has been part of the discussion. Is your guest acquainted with the concept in the South, the lost cause of the Confederacy?
I am not as informed on that. No, please inform me.
Sure. After the Civil War, there became this attitude in the Southern states that were trying to secede. Basically, we could call it, in modern psychological terms, denial. And their attitudes consisted of things like most of the slaves on plantations were treated very well, and actually that they were so childlike that it was actually better to keep them as slaves because they wouldn't be able to take care of themselves if they were free. Another part of the attitude is the South would have won the war because militarily, General Lee was a much better tactician. Unfortunately for the South, there were just too many Union soldiers, and that's why they lost. So basically, it's trying to make themselves feel good for something that is very wrong. That attitude has continued through to today, and although I've heard discussions on critical race theory now, and typically it's Republicans that are objecting to it. But I find that their attitudes and their perspective is basically a continuation of this well-known concept in the South, the lost cause of the Confederacy. Basically, they don't want to bring these things up because it's really not that bad, and it's just going to alienate white people.
Well, let's get Chris to join in. Chris, your thoughts.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the term. I was aware of the phenomenon. And earlier in the show, I brought up a couple of right-wing Christian publications or publishers So like, you know, Akiba or, you know, Bob Jones University Press or, you know, Accelerated Christian Education, who take on that perspective in curriculum. And what it does is it tries to pacify those who would not want to have a perspective other than their own around education. So they will, you know, reimagine reconstruction, you know, under racial reconstruction, the South suffered, but great Southern leaders and the old aristocracy were able, you know, like, you know, those sort of grand narratives that try to position, you know, racist perspectives as A, not that bad, B, in essence, a revisionist history. And what I would argue is that, you know, what this banning of CRT does, if it happens concurrently with the advocating for this sort of revisionist history in curricula and textbooks, will allow there to be a normalizing of a flawed perspective that reinforces perceptions that the enslaved were childlike, or that these generals were brilliant, et cetera. And so, you know, I think that what you're talking about here is, I love the idea of a reimagining or a rebirth of a perspective that looks to rewrite history and then an attempt to sort of place that as the norm. But here's the thing, it's not up to a politician to decide what part of history becomes told or taught in classrooms. It's a responsibility of the educator to offer to young people all of the perspectives to allow them to make sense out of it. You know, I hate to reduce this down to like a playground, almost vernacular and really simplistic view, but this is the political version of like whoever smelt it dealt it on the playground. You know, it's like you know, folks who feel guilty about their perspective and feel guilty about how it makes them feel and feel guilty about the fact that they may be complicit in ensuring that racial bias persists are oftentimes the ones who are shouting out fervently to ban any perspective to be able to allow the truth in its diverse forms to be able to be clear. And literally that's what we're dealing with right now. And if the use of revisionist history is a way to do it, they will do it.
Education scholar at Columbia University Teachers College, Chris Emden, with us on critical race theory, or CRT. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're discussing critical race theory, this academic framework that examines history through the lens of racism. We touched on it with Harvard historian Jill Lepore last month, and she dismissed the fight over CRT as frivolous noise happening on Twitter.
We had the world's sort of biggest movement for racial justice in 2020, and to have it descend into this little pseudo-feud over critical race theory when there are real legislative issues to be tackled, when there's an agenda in Congress to be dealt with, when there are reforms to be dealt with in your local city council, your town council. Those are where the actual battles are, not over critical race theory.
Still time for you, 800-642-1234. Columbia University Associate Professor of Education Chris Emden is with us for about six more minutes. Let's bring in Tom now in Tomahawk. Hi, Tom.
Hello, I'm visiting from Florida, and if a professor really wants to see fire going on about critical race theory, he should see what's going on in Florida. I'm on a League of Women Voters Education Committee, and they claim, the Commissioner of Education by the name of Corcoran, that he's already fired many teachers who dared to teach critical race theory. He hasn't documented that. I'd love to see specifically who he fired. And the governor is on his horse about this, and they are trying to make a name for themselves with the political right. It's so stupid, it's unbelievable. But I applaud your professor for his fire, and keep the good fight going. We'll try to do it down in Florida too.
Tom, thank you. Chris.
Thank you, Tom. I'm always thankful for folks who can see the fight and see that, you know, this is just it's literally political posturing. It's folks trying to make a name. It's folks trying to garner attention. And what's unfortunate is that in their efforts to do so, they're literally recruiting members of the general populace to a fight that has no teeth and just causing folks to be completely distracted. And it's just heartbreaking to see. You know, one of the critiques I've seen as of recent is that, you know, I don't want my kid, you know, learning critical race theory if they're Black, because I don't want somebody to teach my child that they're oppressed. Really? Well, anybody who's teaching a curriculum that does not allow your child to be able to see all that he and his ancestors have overcome over time to still be present is a person that's erasing their ability to have the grit and resilience to move on in the future. You know, it's like these sound bites get popped out and thrown out into the ether, and parents will rightfully revolve around that. Someone say, well, critical race theory is teaching your child that if they're Black, they're oppressed. Well, no, it's not true. Critical race theory is teaching your child that if they're white, they're bad. It's just not true. And people are just throwing out these sound bites that folks are just sort of rallying around simply for the sake of political posturing. So I would agree with the brilliant historian that you had on earlier. Let's not be distracted. It's literally, these are weapons of mass distraction. Folks are literally making up truths and making up lies for the sake of garnering attention. What we should be focused on is the actual work. And for those of us who are interested in law and politics, ensuring that actual laws that make a difference are happening, that things are reflecting the sort of reckoning of race in our nation are happening. And for those of us who teach, at the end of the day, you know, I'm an education guy. Folks can talk about anything else in the world. I want to talk about teaching and learning. I want to talk about the kind of curriculum that we give in classrooms to make young folks feel alive and be informed. I want to talk about how we teach to allow all young folks to bring their truths and selves into the classroom. I want to talk about how teachers feel welcome and whole and free enough and not fearful of some invisible other that's coming to pluck them out of the classroom by making young folks feel alive. And for me, it requires a ratchetemic approach, an equal parts ratchet and academic approach. You know, to be ratchet, to be raw and apologetic, to move with fervor, to move with your authentic self, and to be concurrently academic and intellectual and lean towards the height of knowledge, and to do all those things at once so that classrooms are places where all young folks have a fervor to learn is what I'm about. Okay. Everything else is a distraction, and I'm unconcerned with it.
We only have a few seconds left, but do you see signs of progress that our country is dealing with its racist past and making strides toward equality? Are there moments?
Yes, absolutely. That's why this stuff is so silly. With the recognition that we all collectively must advocate for Black lives that have been harmed by the criminal justice system, by the schooling system, by society. Like that the world is reckoning with the fact that we exist in this space and time where all folks must feel valued. Like that reality emerging. You know, that people are pushing back against voter suppression laws, that, you know, that young folks are really leaning into the beauty and power and brilliance of who they are, despite, you know, how society views them. Like, these are all some magical moment in time that can lead us to be a better world. Mm-hmm. And these folks are attempting to push us back. And so I think that we have many indicators that we're moving in the right direction. There is certainly much more work to do, which is why critical race theory is still important. But we're moving in the right direction.
Chris,
we truly are.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Truly.
Christopher Emden, Associate Professor of Education at Columbia University on the Ideas Network.